Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your week in review for Saturday, January 8th. Hope you all had a good holiday season. I'm going to be jumping around this morning, so I apologize ahead of time. First, I wrote back on December 15th, quote, "As for pension benefits in the public sector, attitudes are changing rapidly." And so I get a kick out of those talking about Obama, the Democrats, and class warfare, rich versus poor. To me, the bigger issue is public versus private, which is its own class warfare. When you talk of the pension issue, often it is also about unfunded liabilities, which was the source of many an article in just the past week. This is what I was writing on December 15th. "Pensions push taxes higher," read one headline in the Wall Street Journal. What's different this time is the tax increases are almost solely to fund pensions because, as you've seen in your own communities, most school budgets certainly aren't going up and services like police and fire are being cut. Again, that was December 15th. And then came the blizzard. I knew as I wrote my rant on the topic last time that many of you wondered why I felt it garnered such front page attention. Hopefully you now understand. My bottom line is, it was about the looming war, public versus private, that has been simmering until now. And so I wrote last January 1st, last week, "Oh, this storm will reverberate for years to come, and you know that public versus private debate of mine from last week? This will help increase the heat," the common refrain directed at Mayor Bloomberg, who amazingly didn't get it until Wednesday afternoon, December 29. Was, "We paid our taxes, dig us out." I then wrote that Bloomberg, in turn, must go after the sanitation workers who treated their fellow New Yorkers like chumps. Lock them up, better yet, throw them in a fetid dumpster filled with rats. 3 days after writing that, the feds launched a criminal probe into allegations some sanitation workers conspired to paralyze Gotham. The Brooklyn U.S. Attorney's Office is looking into whether sanitation bosses plotted to thwart cleanup efforts as a way to protest budget and staff cuts. Brooklyn and Queens district attorneys have joined the case. This is big. How big? Sunday's New York Times, January 2nd, a day after my piece, had the front page headline, "Public workers facing outrage and budget crisis. Union benefits at issue. Officials get support in seeking concessions and wage freezes." As reported by Michael Powell, quote, "Ever since Marie Corfield's confrontation with Governor Chris Christie this fall over the state's education cuts became a YouTube classic, she has received a stream of vituperative emails and Facebook postings. People I don't even know are calling me horrible names," said Ms. Corfield, an art teacher who had pleaded the case of struggling teachers. "The mantra is that the problem is the unions, the unions, the unions." Powell writes, "Across the nation, the rising irritation with public employee unions is palpable as a wounded economy has blown gaping holes in state, city, and town budgets and revealed that some public pension funds dangle perilously close to bankruptcy. In California, New York, Michigan, and New Jersey, states where public unions wield much power and the culture historically tends to be pro-labor, even longtime liberal political leaders have demanded concessions, wage freezes, benefit cuts, and tougher work rules. It is an angry conversation. Union chiefs, who sometimes persuaded members to take pension sweeteners in lieu of raises, are loath to surrender ground. Taxpayers are split between those who want cuts and those who hope that rising tax receipts might bring easier choices. And a growing cadre of political leaders and municipal finance experts argue that much of the edifice of municipal and state finance is jury-rigged and, without new revenue, perhaps unsustainable. Too many political leaders, they argue, acted too irresponsibly, failing to either raise taxes or cut spending. A brutal reckoning awaits, they say. That was Michael Powell of the New York Times. New Jersey is as much ground zero as any other place. Remember those stories I related from last year on some of the sums retired police officers are getting? Not just massive pensions, but also staggering one-time sums for vacation time not taken. Like in excess of 100,000? It has to end. Or as George Will said last Sunday on This Week, the issue of public employees is going to be the dominant issue for years to come. I write the opening of Week in Review on Friday afternoons, and I just picked up the January 8, 14 issue of The Economist. What does it have on its cover? Quote, "The Battle Ahead, Confronting the Public Sector Unions." I don't have the time to read the accompanying pieces for this column, but suffice it to say I'll cover their take next time. But back to the snowstorm of December 26. Economist Kevin Hassett had an op-ed in Bloomberg on January 3rd. Hassett said the reaction of the sanitation workers is a harbinger of things to come. In Europe, the public union, public or union workers, constantly strike and in most cases telegraph ahead of time when they will, such as in France. That is not America's history, nor is it likely to be, but instead we'll increasingly see actions such as those taken in New York. Kevin Hassett, quote, "Sleeping on duty, threatening co-workers, falsifying documents, rudeness, sexual harassment, and poor performance would get you fired from most jobs, according to a recent analysis of personnel cases in Arizona state agencies and the city of Phoenix. But often that's not the case for a government worker. Some examples cited in the study were stunning. In one case, it took 3 years from the time of his arrest to complete the firing of serial killer Dale Hausner from his city job as a custodian at Sky Harbor International Airport in Phoenix. Even if the accusations of a work slowdown are accurate, it's unlikely anyone will lose their job in the New York City snow debacle. The same will be true around the country. Government workers can be ineffective and unproductive with impunity. So here's one vision for 2011 in the U.S. Subways slower, lines at airports longer, trash and snow piling up in the streets, visas and other government documents processed less quickly. But no Europe-style riots in the streets unless fed-up taxpayers are the ones who start them." That was Kevin Hassett. My point in focusing on this topic is not that it's a market mover in and of itself, though clearly the ability, or rather inability, of state and local governments to meet their existing pension obligations impedes economic growth, and in that respect, the public versus private debate is critical. And no doubt in Europe, this spring it will turn deadly. Ah yes, springtime across Europe. Critical elections in Ireland, where it's almost a certainty the winner will attempt to roll back some of the austerity program that was enacted in order to ensure Ireland received its needed bailout funds. The winner of the election will also try to take away some of the bank guarantees now in place, thus further convulsing euro financial markets, beginning with those European banks that hold Irish bank paper now being guaranteed. Britain's labor unions have already scheduled a massive protest for April 27, right between Easter and the royal wedding, that promises to be rather entertaining, or scary, as by then the Cameron government's austerity program will be biting in earnest. And as I noted last week, we all should pray he's successful. And then there will be other mass protests across Europe, no doubt, including France and Italy, I suspect. Perhaps the U.S. is the beneficiary in a flight to safety, but it will also just further help shine a light on our own massive debt issues. So, to reemphasize my call that I made last week in Week in Review for 2011, I believe stocks will finish down 5-7% for the year. The euro debt crisis will be with us for a long time, well into 2012. European banks have major transparency issues that will again rise to the forefront. France threatens to be a major mess, which I will discuss more fully next week. And there are the usual geopolitical concerns that I continue to focus on because these are the ones that can turn a bull into a bear in a heartbeat. Speaking of which, it was back on January 2nd, 2010, that I said last year, 2010, would be about a heavy dose of Pakistan as it hurtles towards collapse with unfathomable consequences. As I admitted, though, last week, and looking back at the year, I missed it. But then in speaking of 2011, last time I wrote this, quote, "Pakistan is a mess and Islamists want more control of the government. Another high-profile assassination seems a certainty. The equity markets could drop 3% the day it occurs. Just 3 days later, the assassination occurred. But markets didn't react because it wasn't Pakistan's president or prime minister. It was, however, the governor of the most populous state, Punjab, Salman Taseer, who was riddled with 29 bullets by one of his bodyguards. Salman Taseer was a heroic figure, with U.S. and British officials calling him a champion of tolerance. Punjab is home to the wealthiest Pakistanis, but also a number of extremist organizations, and Taseer was assassinated because he was opposed to a long-standing blasphemy law that carries the death sentence for anyone insulting the Muslim faith. In the past, judges reversed the convictions and no one has been put to death, but the Islamists, of whom the bodyguard is one, are seeking to change this. So the immediate question and ongoing concern when discussing Pakistan is, to what extent are security forces infiltrated by extremists? We know the army and intelligence services are, but does this mean a coup is a certainty? A coup that would, yes, cause the markets to tank over fears for control of Pakistan's nuclear weapons and an almost certain war with India. In that scenario, India would fire first, just my opinion. Before Taseer was gunned down at a high-class shopping mall, the story for the week had been the lack of cooperation that Pakistan's Army Chief of Staff, General Kiani, was supplying the U.S. in terms of going after the Taliban's and al-Qaeda's safe havens. Kiani was supposed to be a good friend, a man the U.S. could count on, but evidently he's upset by the WikiLeaks cables showing him as being too chummy with Washington, which doesn't go over well at home, so he needs to be the bad guy now. And a few days earlier, Pakistan's second-largest party in the ruling coalition defected to the opposition, so there is a chance early elections would have to be called this year, which wouldn't be good. But you know why many in Pakistan's leadership don't like the United States and refuse to cooperate in the war on terror? It's because of the sense that once we leave Afghanistan, we'll abandon Pakistan. Of course, such an opinion is spot on. That's our history. I see there is a story in Saturday's Washington Post on the Obama administration's, quote, decision to double down on Pakistan, so I may have more on this next time. Turning to the other news of the week, the 112th Congress assembled with a decidedly Republican hue, especially in the House, with John Boehner taking over for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. There will be plenty of time, like 2 years, to comment on this chamber, but for now the House will pass measures that will likely die in the Senate, including repeal of Obamacare, as the Senate remains 53-47 Democratic. I still have a hard time seeing Harry Reid as majority leader. I keep wanting to put him in the minority. As Charlie Brown is fond of saying, drat. Another big issue to watch this coming spring, as early as March 31st, is extension of the debt ceiling from its authorized $14.29 trillion. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner sent a four-page letter to all members of Congress, saying in part that if the government hits the ceiling, it would not be able to pay interest on Treasury bonds and then default, which would cause, quote, catastrophic damage to the economy, potentially more harmful than the effects of the financial crises of 2008 and 2009, he wrote. Geithner added, even a very short-term or limited default would have catastrophic economic consequences that would last for decades. Speaker Boehner said, quote, while America cannot default on its debt, we all cannot continue to borrow recklessly, dig ourselves deeper into this hole, and mortgage the future of our children and grandchildren. So, as everyone has noted, it's becoming a giant game of chicken. Congressmen want to be on the record as being fiscally responsible, but Geithner is right. It would be a disaster. Republicans have leverage in the House, but let's see how Obama handles the issue in his State of the Union. There is a way out of this looming interim crisis. It just requires leadership on all sides. And let's see, back in the United States, the data on the week was strong. That is until Friday in the December jobs report. November construction spending was up when a decline was expected. The December ISM reading on manufacturing was a strong 57, while the service sector reading came in at 57.1. Both good. And November factory orders were up 0.7. But then the December jobs number was released, and while the unemployment rate mysteriously declined to 9.4% from 9.8, only 103,000 jobs were created when the estimate on growth in the labor force had run up to 150,000 plus by week's end. Many economists were as high as 190,000. Average hourly earnings, which I focus on, were up just 0.1%, though over the past year they've increased 1.8%, which is better than zero. I'm not going to harp on the employment numbers for today. Had I placed a bet, I would have said 150,000 jobs and a 9.7% rate. So I'm going to wait until the next reading to see if some things even out due to various anomalies. Stocks continued to advance the first week of 2011, with the Dow Jones up 0.8% to 11,674 and the S&P 500 up 1.1%. Retail sales figures for December were generally disappointing, as the likes of Target, Macy's, and Gap came in below expectations, though some luxury retailers did well. Overall, the International Council of Shopping Centers said December sales rose 3.1% versus November's 5.6% pace, but combined it comes out to 3.8%. But now it's earnings season beginning Monday, and the year-over-year comparisons will be much more difficult in 2011 than they were in 2010. That's all for this week. Hope you have a good one. I'll be back with you Saturday, January 15th. Take care.